Back in the early 1990s, I was presenting a talk at a cotton production meeting, extension meeting over Forest City, Arkansas. Johnny knows where that is. That's close to his, where he discovered America. But after I got through making an excellent presentation of my variety test data, this young farmer during the break came up and asking me, he couldn't decide which variety to grow. He said, I can't decide whether Delta Fine 20 or Delta Fine 50. I spent a bunch of time explaining those are sister lines. There's not a lot of difference, but all the little finite differences in those two varieties, and he just kept asking me, and I finally said, listen, just plant some of both and see which one works best for you. He said, well, I can't do that. And I said, why not? He said, well, I'm going to only buy one bag for my 5 acres. So there's a lot of factors going into what our situation is in terms of determining which cotton variety is best for a particular situation. Some observations I'd like to start off with. First of all, variety selection can profoundly affect the profitability of cotton production. Very typically in my variety test, there's often a twofold differences in yield of varieties. So which one I choose to start off with makes a big difference on which one is the most profitable. Secondly, there's no perfect variety, and I think it's pretty fortunate for us cotton breeders that there's not, because somebody would have already found it, and we'd be out of business, and I'd get to retire, I guess. Thirdly, there's a high variety by test environment interactions are the norm. I don't know that I've ever run multiple locations, or very seldom I run multiple locations, that I don't get a significant interaction. And therefore, it gets very difficult to define which variety is best for any specific situation. Fourthly, varieties differ greatly in various traits. We like to measure a lot of different things, and typically you find a lot of difference in all these other traits that can affect which one is best for a situation, and the producer has to go through and determine and put priorities together. Before transgenics came, the priorities came. I'm not that short, am I? It won't stay up there. Before transgenics came available, the priority is pretty easy to set up. I recall a number of people saying, well, first priority is yield, second priority is yield, third priority is yield. That was it. Then we would have multiple year data. And with multiple year data, you give me 3 or 4 years data, I can tell you which one is the best variety for almost any situation. Then we'd look at all these other type of factors, seed quality, host plant resistance, maturity, all of these fiber and all this would help us determine which and just make sure those were in acceptable ranges and we were okay on a variety. With the transgenics, it's a different world on variety selection. The number one factor is determine the transgenic package, and to some extent that's regardless what it yields. Then within a transgenic practice, once a producer determines which transgenic practice he has to have, then we do look at yield within that package. But the problem is now we're getting a lot of times we don't have multiple year data to back that up. And that scarcity of data over locations makes it very difficult. And then also makes it difficult when we start trying to compare varieties with different technologies. Particularly when you start talking about insect resistance and presence and absence of these things can really cloud trying to compare one technology to another. And then further complicating it, because of the rapid turnover of varieties, we're getting less and less attention paid to all these other factors that I mentioned. So a lot of producers are having to make selection on a very scarce amount of information. And kind of to illustrate this, in 1996, when BT was first introduced into Arkansas, before I ever looked at it in the variety test, 15% of our acreage was BT cotton. It was in such demand to have the BT technology. Simply when Roundup came in the next year, we had 5% Roundup, and I'd never looked at it in a variety test. Roundup Ready very quickly became the first priority. I recall a producer coming to my office wanting to compare varieties. I told him, look at these real good conventional varieties. He says, no, it's got to be Roundup. It doesn't matter what it yields, it's got to be Roundup ready, because he was primarily worried about drift from his neighbor. And that becomes a big factor in making a variety selection. Now we're being dictated by glyphosate resistant pigweed. In 2014, 70% of cotton acreage in Arkansas was Liberty Link cotton. Now, here shows kind of what has happened over the years. From 1995, we had almost 100% conventional. That white bar you show has gone down by 2004, is down to almost 0% conventional. All of the others are transgenic, and if you add them together, it's almost became 100% transgenic. In the last 4 years, this has really shifted. In that previous slide, is primary Bogard Roundup Ready, which in 2011 made up 88% of our acreage. Now that's dropped down to 23, along with Wide Strike. But the real thing that has occurred is the Liberty Link making up 70% or over 70% of our acres. This has been driven by glyphosate-resistant weeds, and primarily pigweed. Weed scientists tell me there's 31 documented weed species now are resistant to glyphosate. If glyphosate resistance is dominant in a field, glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth is dominant in a field, a producer must choose a strategy to deal with them, or else he's going to be out of business. Our weed sciences indicate that Liberty Link is the best system, best approach to handling those resistant pigweeds. In 2014, our variety test, we had 5 Liberty Link varieties that were tested. Of these, only 2 had been tested in 2013. So if you put the added priority that it's got to be Liberty Link and I want 2 years' data, then you only got to choose between 2 different varieties. So variety selection become very easy. You about flip a coin, Johnny. You don't even have to look at data anymore. Well, I went the wrong direction. Here. Transgenic insect control is a little bit different issue with caterpillar control with BT2, twin link, wide strike. All of these are different constructs of BT genes, and from what I understand from our entomologists, all of them provide a reasonable control of caterpillars. Except for very minor acreage of conventional, all of our cotton in our South Central Delta region carried one of these BT genes. Now, the question I pose to you, is there a bias in variety testing concerning BT cotton? I don't think there is with the herbicide-resistant genes, but consider back in 1990, from 0 to 30% of the varieties in my variety test were BT. When we went out and scouted that test, what were we looking at? We were looking at non-BT, and we were applying worm control based primarily on non-BT varieties. Now, about 90% is BT. When we scouted, what are we scouting? We're scouting BT varieties, and it's very possible that our non-BT varieties are at a distinct disadvantage now that they were not earlier. So I suggest to our producers conventional cottons may be a viable option over BT cotton if your worm pressure is not high. Particularly in North Arkansas, that is a factor. Now, second thing I want to visit with you about is understanding yield data. And this is kind of a work in progress, so if you're thinking about you're going to get all the answers today, you probably won't. Some criteria. First of all, data, variety test data can be overwhelming. It's amazing what we testers can, how much numbers we can generate. And I would suggest to you that secondly is that those data can be spun to about tell you anything. I can take extract data from a variety test and pretty much tell you any variety there except the very bottom one is good if you allow me to extract which data to show you. And there's where our producers have become very concerned is, are we producing unbiased data? And that's certainly a major thing for us in variety testing and in any science is to that they have confidence that I'm producing unbiased data. For me to compare the different ones from different companies, I really don't care who wins. They don't pay me enough. The companies don't pay. If they paid me enough, I might be bought off, but it'd take quite a bit of money. So I really don't care which one wins, and I'm going to present data as I produce it. If I'm a company, I'm not going to change the data, but some data you may never see the light of day. Unbiased, complete data is essential for the integrity of our science. And then the final point there, and I think this is one that is becoming more and more of the issue, that it must not be compromised by faulty experimentation. And that's getting to be more and more difficult. And I'm not saying that we're lousy experimenters, but it's just getting more and more complicated. Some issues are just hard to evaluate. Now, in Arkansas, we evaluate typically at four different, our state variety test at four locations. They span north-south about 180 miles and also encompass some different varieties. And the data set that, and primarily my co-author is working on my data that I've given to him, we've taken lint yields from these four locations and from 2005 through 2013, except we had excluded Kaiser because of some production problems in 2013. In that set of data, there's about 13 to 20 varieties that we each year would have a three-year average. And what he has done is gone through and made the dependent variable is the yield at each one of these four different locations. The explanatory variable be the yield by variety in the first year, which we designated as X1, and yield in the second previous year as X2, or 2 years before the data that we're using as our dependent variable. And here's initially the regression, and I was shocked by how low these are. That's telling me my data is not explaining what happens next year. There's two things I really think comes out of this. One is that these locations are relatively independent, but also, to a large extent, years may also be independent. The other thing, if you'll notice, these R-squares associated with ROAR are the best, and that's when we break it down, looking at the first year data explaining yield at each location, that bottom line ROAR had a significant explaining yield at each of the locations each year. Now ROAR is right across the river from Stoneville, Mississippi, and I think that's probably some of the factors there that I've been told ever since I've been involved with cotton that Stoneville was the best data set. Well, maybe they're right. I'm not quite ready to give into that, but ROAR does the data there. What happened? That was really good data too. It's back. Okay, we're back. Okay, the second best was Mariana. That moves up about 90 miles. And the worst set of data is Judd Hill. Now, Judd Hill is very different from the other locations in that it has very heavy verticillium wilt. So, again, there's an independent factor involved there. Now, if I look at using the year before, the X2, it's even worse. Again, ROAR is the best explaining data at everywhere except ROAR. Then look at everything else is negative relationships. And I don't know if he's in the room or not. Archie, are you in the room? Good. It's an ag economist that are working these data. So we're going to be working on this some more. Things I'm wanting to do, we're going to do some additional analysis using the 1 and 2 year data to help explain variation in various the county trials. We'll do this in cooperation with Bill Robertson. He does a number of county trials, so we're going to see what combinations of our variety test data best explain the variability he's seeing in yield data. We're also going to do some cooperative work with Tyson Raper over in Tennessee to better describe variety test locations. I still think that yield over our location provide us provides information on broad adaptability with minimum maturity bias. We don't early and late maturing varieties do not have a strong bias in our three four locations. And finally, yield is a complex component. And that's the reason we look at a lot of these yield components. We present this in our data, and I've highlighted kind of green ones that I think have the best combination of yield components and red ones that have poor in this slide, and you don't have time to digest that. But we also present a lot of other data, fiber data, bacterial blight, verticillium tolerance, tolerance plant bug resistance, trichomes, maturity. What I envision I would like to do, particularly if we can do it with Tyson, come up with some type of indexing that a producer can go in, these are my priorities, push a button, then it'll come out, these are the varieties that meet those priorities best. I'm sorry, have I gone over? I got 28 seconds. I thought, I was nervous. I saw you standing up. Are there any questions? You got 20 seconds.
I have one. So are you saying that we shouldn't yield test?
I don't think I said that. Did anybody hear me say that?
Well, I mean, the reason I asked is because I know that
No. Well, the answer to it, I'm very confused by these data, and I think it really takes some more understanding or more analysis to better understand. I think we've got to be able to understand our locations and what those data mean. No, if we're not yield testing, I might as well go ahead and retire now. But I think some of these other parameters can help explain when we don't explain it by yield, those because of the year and location by variety interactions we have. Any other easier questions? Very good. Thank you. Oh, all right.